But first, with the week in rural news, here's Tony Allen. And Tony, a tragedy this week in New South Wales over environmental tensions.
Yes, this week, 79-year-old Cropper Creek farmer from northern New South Wales, Ian Turnbull, was charged with the murder of a compliance officer from the New South Wales Environment and Heritage Department, Glenn Turner. He was fatally shot near Moree. Now, it's alleged the dispute centred around land clearing. In June, Mr Turnbull was found guilty of illegal land clearing in the Land and Environment Court, and Mr Turner was serving a notice related to that. Now, while the case is still before the courts and we can't say too much about it, it has been widely regarded as a great tragedy. And the Chief Executive Office of the Office of Environment and Heritage in New South Wales, Terry Bailey, says they are going to be internally reviewing their practices of serving notices and following up alleged land clearing breaches, but the officers are not going to back down on enforcing the legislation.
They were inspecting a separate property and we'd followed our normal practices and procedures in undertaking that. There is no doubt that there is a history of compliance issues around Copper Creek that we've been investigating. Having taken that into account, that increases the level of diligence we do in relation to the operations that we conduct.
Now, in the area of northern New South Wales where this is such a big issue, the local mayor and lots of community leaders are calling for a decrease in the tensions. Environment groups are saying that farmers are being reluctant to comply with land clearing restrictions. On the other hand, the former president of the New South Wales Farmers Association, Mal Peters, who does live in the area, says the state government must share some of the blame for the tension. He says the coalition government was elected on a promise of getting rid of land clearing restrictions, and that did ease a lot of the tension. But the Native Vegetation Act is still in force.
When the rhetoric of the politicians is, we'll fix this and it'll be okay, people take them on their word. And I think that's what's tended to happen. But the reality is that the Act has not been repealed.
A bit of a follow-up on a story we've reported on, a kerfuffle, if you like, between veggie growers and a Jamie Oliver fruit and veggie marketing campaign.
Yes, if you've been in Woolworths in June or July, you couldn't have failed to notice the portraits of Jamie Oliver all over the place. Things like mini glass houses for sale, books for children, all related to a fresh fruit and vegetable promotion run by Woolworths using Jamie Oliver. Now, the controversy from the growers' point of view was that they were voluntarily asked to pay an additional 40 cents a crate of food to help fund that advertising campaign. Many of them were not happy. Woolworths does say 50% of the growers ended up paying this voluntary levy. But Andrew McDonald from the lobby group AusVeg says his members are still angry about the program.
If these figures are correct or to be believed, the obvious question we'd then ask is really how much of this money is going to be returned to the hardworking growers who supplied the supermarket and contributed to the campaign. I mean, if growers don't get their fair share of this campaign, then really you could accuse the retailer of really crowing about it.
And yes, Woolworths claimed that the sales jumped 7% due to that campaign, so there'll be more to follow up on there.
They also sold lots of products associated with fruit and vegetables, so I think we'll see more campaigns like this.
Yes. Now, the Grains Research and Development Corporation is putting up some money to tackle a particularly nasty virus.
The beet western yellows virus, it's not something we discuss in household conversation, but it is really knocking around the canola industry. And canola is a major export used, of course, in cooking oil and margarine. This virus has affected thousands of hectares of canola, particularly in South Australia, but also in Victoria and New South Wales. It's the most severe outbreak ever seen. And the farmers are very worried, and the scientists are very worried, it's going to spread into the pulse crops like chickpeas and lentils come spring because it really can affect any broadleaf crop at all. So the Grains Research and Development Corporation has committed $315,000 in emergency funding for further research to help scientists develop strategies to help the growers right now and also into the future. Now, GRDC plant health manager Dr. Ken Young says it is rare for the body to contribute such a large amount of emergency funding, but that just shows how severe the situation is.
The funding response is really to try and to protect the crops in the ground. We want to protect the remaining crops, both canola and pulse crops, but also want to go back and determine the exact causes or range of events that have led to this large outbreak.
We've talked a lot about a possible El Nino event this spring and summer. Some good news on that front.
Well, the El Nino pattern, which brings warmer and drier conditions to eastern Australia, sometimes drought, and farmers don't look forward to any El Ninos, is largely defined by warming of the waters of the tropical Pacific Ocean. The latest climate modelling shows temperatures there have cooled. So last month, the Weather Bureau was saying we had at least a 70% chance of an El Nino developing in spring. Now, they have now revised down that prediction, and Dr. Andrew Watkins from the Bureau says that forecast could still change further.
So we're definitely not in the clear as yet. There's still about a 50% chance. What that actually means, in a normal year, there's about 20-25% chance. So we're about double the normal risk of an El Nino. So we're certainly not out of the woods yet. And indeed, 5 of the 8 models that we survey from around the world are still suggesting an El Nino may occur.
Now, it seems like it's months since the federal budget, but of course a lot of the measures announced in that budget haven't yet occurred, and one of those, of course, where the money hasn't been flowing is for roads.
Yes, if there's a pothole down your street, you might blame it on the Senate, because the government's Land Transport Infrastructure Amendment Bill has so far failed to pass the Senate. It's delayed $350 million in funding for its Roads to Recovery program over the next 2 years. Now, Roads to Recovery money is not for fixing big interstate highways. It goes to local councils to fund local roadworks. And the councils, if you talk to them, will say, we could not do without this money. There's assorted political wrangling in the Senate that's held it up, and the chief executive of the Livestock and Bulk Carriers Association in New South Wales, Andrew Higginson, says the delay in this money could have significant flow-on effects for all sorts of businesses, including transporters.
We might have a local industry who could benefit greatly from an improved road. If that fund is not flowing through the local council, it could put that industry or that particular producer out of business. A month's delay, 2 months delay, the compounding effects of that can be disastrous for any industry.
Now, one of the photos that popped out at me on Twitter this week was an amazing picture of a huge sandalwood plantation in the Territory.
Yeah, the Northern Territory has a company called Tropical Forestry Services is planting 1,400 hectares of sandalwood in the Territory this year. That company has the biggest holdings of Indian sandalwood in the world, even bigger than India. And for the first time, they're trying a new technique to make the sandalwood grow better. They're putting guards around each tree and each host tree, because sandalwood needs another tree to grow up. Now, this is aimed at allowing them to spray herbicide around the trees and also to keep the wind off the seedlings. The remarkable thing is the scale of this plantation means they have to import 4 million bamboo sticks from China.
It is extraordinary,
isn't it? Hold up these tree guards. And Regional Manager for Tropical Forestry Services, Nick Common, says this job of putting the tree guards up is all done by hand, but the change in tactics is paying off with protection against the weeds and the wind.
We reckon you could probably just about see it from space. But the benefits we're seeing from them definitely outweigh the costs. So definitely going to be a normal procedure from now on.
And I'm sure it smells nice.
Yeah, that's a tree planting. I'm not sure I'd be sticking my hand up for those.
I hope they're getting a bulk discount on the bamboo stakes.
Goodness me, yes. Now, some interesting results from a truancy program.
A bit of an irony here. Truancy officers, as we know, were placed in remote communities across northern Australia back in January to help boost class attendance rates. It was a federal government policy, and it's been remarkably successful. And ironically, it's made teaching harder. The Catholic Indigenous Community Schools Organisation in the Northern Territory runs 5 bush schools, and some of them have truancy officers. They've had a lot of trouble getting extra staff, experienced staff, and they need particularly experienced staff because of this truancy program. Jerry McCarthy from the organisation says the rise in student numbers at the schools is proving problematic for the teachers.
when kids are coming into school who are unschooled and can create quite a disturbance in the school, particularly for teachers. So that's quite a challenge in itself. Yes, it's good to get those students back to school, but to manage those students as well can be very, very challenging, and teachers have to be incredibly resilient.
Resilient than usual, Tony.
Yes, indeed they do. Teachers do have their challenges.
They do. Thank you.
Thank you.